How did one of the world's most famous atheists become one of its most famous Christians? Find out in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, From Atheism to Christianity, The Story of C.S. Lewis. It's written by regular guest Dr. Joel Heck. From Atheism to Christianity is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. From Atheism to Christianity. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I think the term that I hear most often when it comes to same-sex marriage in the United States is settled law, right? Obergefell, that Supreme Court decision of last year, it settled it, didn't it? Of course, opinion continues to change, to migrate. You might be surprised to find out that even with the suddenness of that Supreme Court decision, support among Americans for same-sex marriage is on the rise. In fact, more than doubled in the last 20 years. We're going to talk about a Gallup poll that shows that support among the American population and try to understand it a little bit better. Peter Sprigg joins us, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at the Family Research Council and author of the book Outrage, How Gay Activists and Liberal Judges Are Trashing Democracy to Redefine Marriage. Peter, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me.
Somebody looks at these numbers. 64% of Americans voice support in one form or another for same-sex marriage, and they say, look, social conservatives, you have lost. You're on the wrong side of history. The numbers are against you, and it's time to just give up this issue. How do you respond?
Well, marriage is too important to a social institution, too important to the health of our society for us to just capitulate to a false understanding of it. And so I think if we care about children, if we care about the health of our society, we have to continue to speak out for an accurate understanding of marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Now, I think it's undoubtedly true that support for same-sex marriage has increased over the years, but the exact level is very sensitive to the exact wording of the question that is asked. So, for example, as recently as 2 years ago, right after the Obergefell decision of the Supreme Court imposing a redefinition of marriage on the country, there was a poll asking, do you favor, oppose, or neither favor nor oppose allowing same-sex couples to be legally married in your state? And only 34% favored. Now, I don't think we've seen a doubling of support for same-sex marriage in just 2 years. So I think it hinges in part on the questioning. When you ask a question in terms of rights, that creates sympathy. When you ask questions in terms of whether something should be legal, that raises sort of doubts from a libertarian perspective about making something illegal. But, and both of those work to the advantage of people who support same-sex marriage. But when you ask a question in terms of the definition, do you believe marriage should be defined as the union of one man and one woman, then you routinely will get higher support for a traditional view of marriage.
What if you were to ask even a more particular question, like, do you believe that same-sex marriage is equal to or better than heterosexual marriage for the raising of children?
Well, that would be an important question as well. And certainly, we believe that the research clearly shows, the social science research clearly shows, that the family structure in which children are most likely to thrive is when they are raised by their own biological mother and father who are committed to one another in a lifelong marriage. Now, we know that not every child has the privilege of being raised in that situation, but you know, we believe that even in the case of adoption or step-parent situations, that children benefit from having both a male and a female role model. So I think that many people understand that, and while viewed from the perspective of individual rights, they may support an individual right to marry someone of the same sex at the same time, they may understand that this is not necessarily what is best for children.
You had used the term earlier that Obergefell had imposed same-sex marriage on the country. I want you to explain that, but also to explore that idea just a little bit in terms of this being really, and very seldom do you hear people mention this, this is a social experiment being played out by the Supreme Court, isn't it?
Right. I mean, I do try to, you know, the way that we use language is reflects the way that we perceive the issue. It reflects our worldview and our framing of an issue. We believe the issue is not the right to marry. Everyone has a right to marry, but the issue is the definition of marriage. We believe that by definition, marriage is the union of one man and one woman, and anything that is not the union of a man and a woman simply cannot be a marriage. And we also think that what the Supreme Court did was to what the Supreme Court did was not to recognize a right. What it did was to impose a redefinition of a social institution on all 50 states. Now, again, the polls taken shortly before that decision showed that by an almost 2-to-1 margin, Americans believe that, I looked up the quote here, states and citizens should remain free to uphold marriage as the union of a man and a woman, and the Supreme Court shouldn't force all 50 states to redefine marriage. So certainly this is something that should have been decided through the democratic process and not through this kind of judicial activism.
Can we even have a sensical conversation about marriage if we leave family out of the equation, and obviously implying children out of the equation?
Well, I don't think so. And this is, you know, there's a lot of people get confused about this because they say, well, not all married people have children, so marriage can't be about children. But that's not the real question. The real question is, what is the public purpose of marriage? Why do we treat marriage as a public institution in the first place, rather than as a purely private relationship? I mean, we've never required people to get a license from the government to take on a new best friend, and we've never required them to get an action of a court when they decide not to be best friends with someone anymore. So what is unique about this intimate personal relationship that we call marriage? The only thing that's unique enough to justify government participation in the institution at all is the role that it plays in creating the next generation and creating households that will effectively raise the next generation. So that's why marriage is a public institution in the first place. And that's what a lot of people, I think, misunderstand. Even today, I hear people, I hear Christians, for example, saying, well, let's just separate marriage from the state altogether. Let's get the state out of marriage, just let the church handle it. The problem is people who are not part of any church, people who are atheists, are still going to get married and have children. And the rights and those children need to be protected. It is an obligation of society at large, acting through the government, to protect the interests of those children.
With only about 30 seconds here, Peter, some might say social conservatives are simply obsessed with what happens in other people's bedrooms and gay marriage doesn't hurt anyone. How would you respond with 30 seconds?
Well, again, it does hurt. It hurts the children who are being denied the opportunity to be raised by their own mother and father. So that's the real issue, is not what people do in their bedroom, but the issue is demanding that the government affirm, celebrate, and subsidize what they do in their bedroom.
Peter Sprigg is Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at the Family Research Council and author of the book Outrage: How Gay Activists and Liberal Judges Are Trashing Democracy to Redefine Marriage. We'll post a link to the Family Research Council at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Peter, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with Nicole King of the Family in America about a New York Times Magazine story. Is an open marriage a happier marriage? Isn't it amazing how quickly, once you open the Pandora's box of redefining marriage, marriage gets redefined in every way imaginable? I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Padres, ¿cómo pueden ustedes preparar a sus hijos a vivir en un mundo contracristiano donde la persecución crece más y más? Leen la edición de mayo de The Lutheran Witness para aprender sobre la enseñanza de la fe, que pertenece principalmente no al pastor, sino que a los padres. Visiten a cph.org/trylutheranwitness para una oferta especial. 6 ediciones digitales o impresas para $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpretando a un mundo contemporáneo desde una perspectiva cristiana.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.